When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's talk Mariners. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it's Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer, of course. Hey, Shannon, I actually am going to start with a weather question. Wondering how the forecast is looking for this one. It's a 5:40 p.m. Not local time, Seattle first pitch. I know there's some rain in the forecast, but it's also freezing, 39 degrees right now. Are we going to get this game in?
Well, here's the problem, Stacy, is you do look at the forecast, and they do have snow forecast at 8 o'clock tonight, local here, 39 degrees. So I don't think that would stick, but it certainly would be miserable. And precipitation, like for the entire afternoon, starting at 5 o'clock, is 87% and up. So it looks like that's going to happen. But the problem is I think tomorrow might be just as bad, if not worse. And, one way or another, they're going to be tomorrow it looks like it's a little bit less precipitation, but it's going to be cold and miserable. Without question, this is going to be the roughest conditions they face, obviously, so far this year, but probably for the entire season. They'll be playing, if they play, in the 30s.
I'm so jealous when it comes to that in baseball. They cancel games. Football, they're like, hey, so what? Suck it up. Get on out there and go play some ball. Well, what do you guys do when games are canceled? What do the Mariners do if they do not play tonight?
Okay, first of all, football games in the snow are the best, so I'm glad they don't cancel them, okay? There is nothing better in my book.
We say that because we've never played in them, Shannon.
I've marched in them. Does that
fair
count?
Fair point.
I've sat through them, and I have marched in them. Nothing, really. I mean, what usually happens is the best situation for us, being the non-players, is they call the game before you even get to the stadium. Usually it happens when you've gotten to the stadium. So they do what they can to get work in before. Hitters can always hit in cages. Usually the pitchers will bundle up and go outside and throw just to activate their arms. But once it's called, there's really nothing you can do. So, it's a lost day, and you're facing a doubleheader the next day. So your best bet at that point is to go out, get a good dinner, get a good night of sleep, and get ready for a long day tomorrow.
I have another weird question, though. So for Denver, it may be snowing tomorrow, too. Is there like a slim chance that there's games canceled today and tomorrow and just kind of pushed back or postponed, maybe even into Monday?
Let me tell you what happened in the early 2000s.
Oh, God.
Stacey.
Okay.
I don't think you were born yet, but
that's very kind of you. You're right. You're so right.
it was the opening series for Cleveland, but it was, I think, a week into the season. We had four straight games snowed out.
Oh, my God.
And we went to the park every day. Those who were smarter than me, and that was early on in my career, so I was going to do everything right. I was going to go to the park in rain, sleet, hail, whatever it took. But the day the first game got canceled just shy and out shy of being a regulation game. Jose Lopez was at the plate. Snow was coming down. Paul Bird on the hill. And Jose just turned to the umpire and said, I can't see the ball. I can't tell what's a ball and what's a snowflake right now. And they called the game. And Bird had a no-hitter going. It might have even been perfect at that point. But they called the game, and it never happened. The next day we get to the park, and they say we are going to play. We look out. There are 2 feet of snow on the field. And they've got, like, all the John Deere tractors out there shoveling the snow. And as they got left field covered and went on to center and right, as they got to right field, by the time they got there, left field was covered again. And so we trudged back to the hotel. It's a four-game series. The next day they said, oh, yeah, we're going to play. I went to the stadium. A bunch of people didn't. Sure enough, the next 2 days, we did not play. The entire four-game series was snowed out. And what that meant, because it was not in division, was we had to go back to Cleveland. We had to find off days and go back to Cleveland on the off days. And that was, and we also lost a game in Boston on that same trip. And so it's you know, as bad as the Mariners travel was back then, it was made worse by three extra trips to Cleveland. And then we played a doubleheader on one of the days and made up two. Okay, yeah, so it was three. And so we don't want, I mean, Denver would be a little bit easier to do that. That's not a bad flight. It's only one time zone. But, yeah, that can happen, especially this early in the season. Last year in September, the year before, we got a lot of rain in Cleveland, and they said, you're staying until this game is played. And we ended up, it was like a five-hour rain delay. It was a getaway day, and they'll do that at the end of the season. But at the beginning of the season, you know, you might have to come back. And that goes to my theory, and I've said this for many years. I think this should be a rule in baseball. You know, if you can guarantee the game will be played in your stadium, that's where the makeup game should be played. Why the Mariners have to be put out anytime somebody who doesn't have a roof has a game canceled, I don't know. Why? Because they'll never do that to another team. I would love to see those makeup games played if you can guarantee that it will be played in the stadiums with the roofs.
Well, Shannon, you draw it up and I'll sign the petition. Let's get this thing going, man. Let's get it going. And selfishly, I want these guys to play because the Mariners are coming off of a series sweep, the first series win of the season, and you want them to kind of ride this momentum. What was the biggest thing that stood out to you in that sweep over the Reds?
Well, I think that it had been building a little bit on the pitching end. We finally got the starting pitching back, and that's it shouldn't be a big relief. You shouldn't have thought that they were going to be bad all season long. You know, they had an off start and they got back. But seeing that we did see some power, which if you listen to Mike Salk in the morning, you know that's the biggest thing he thinks is missing. But we also saw some of those bigger innings, and we also saw the innings the entire game where they were just able to get the pitch count up of the starting pitcher. They were seeing just over five pitches per plate appearance, and that wasn't every batter's having the great at bat. You had some long ones on Saturday. What day is it? On Tuesday, I don't know. In game two, sorry, baseball, Shannon. Game two, it's the fourth inning. J.P. Crawford and Julio Rodriguez combined to see 18 pitches. In the first two batters of that inning. That just absolutely kills an opposing starter. And it got the starter out eventually. We saw Mitch Garver with an 11-pitch at-bat. We saw Mitch Haniger with the long at-bats. All of those things, they were grinding down pitchers, which is part of their game. That doesn't mean they're not going to swing. Yes, if they get their pitch, by all means. But if you don't dig in and get that pitch count up early, if you can, especially if it's that first game, because that can destroy the bullpen going forward in a series. So I just think all aspects, we saw them play some better defense, and I think that's feeding off of everything else going right. I think the defense drags when the team drags, but when the team picks up, you start seeing a little bit of an extra, a little pep in the step, a little bit more life in the defense, and I think that we saw that as well. So I think starting pitching kind of started things out and gives the team, you know, that feeling like, okay, this is who we are, we're okay, because they know that's their identity. The hitters know that their identity as a pitching, the starting pitching in particular, is really going to lead things, and then go from there. And I think it just snowballed in a good way.
Also, what he talked about earlier this morning, you mentioned Mike Salk, was just how Bryce Miller to him is one of the better and more under-the-radar stories for this team to start the season, and he has been phenomenal. Yesterday, we talked about, in hindsight, how smart it was for the Mariners to hang on to him instead of trying to move him or Woo for extra offense. What have you made to his start to the season and kind of where he can build on from here?
Well, I don't think he was going anywhere. I think that was an easy call for them because I don't think any of this is a surprise to them. You know, that was, and I think that when they were talking about potentially trading for a bat, I think it was a little bit split in the organization and probably not 50-50 in doing that. But there are people who absolutely under no conditions from the get-go last winter did not want to trade one of their starting pitchers. And Bryce is special. I mean, he is, the way that he is able to see his game, diagnose what's wrong with it, and really go to work on it. And you can only do so much in season, and that's kind of why he had that stretch. But while he was having that tough stretch at the end where he lost 8-9 straight, he was starting to go to work on some of the things that we're seeing right now. And if you're following social media, I think he was the first starter to really get going in the off season, and it was after a couple of weeks. And, you know, he went about crafting the new splitter. But he's also changed a lot of his other pitches. He's changed how he's, you know, the usage and the percentage that he uses them. When he came to the big leagues, he was somebody who has a special fastball, which he does, and like five different sliders. And he's kind of pared that down and bettered a few rather than throw the wide variety of them and go from there. And he kind of falls into the Logan Gilbert category where if something is not working, well, he's got not one, but probably two alternatives to it. And that's going to get him through just about any start. So, you know, he is equipped to have great outings. And that doesn't mean he's not going to have a bad day from here or, you know, from time to time. But with what he has added to his repertoire and how he has done it and the study that he puts in, he's a very smart pitcher. He sets up very nicely for this rotation.
Shannon, the last time we spoke to you, you mentioned something that kind of stuck with us. People have been saying you lost some leadership when, you know, you let Gino go. But you mentioned you got Mitch, and Mitch has been leading and playing some good baseball. What's the difference between the way he leads and Gino leads? And why is the way that he leads beneficial for this team?
Gino was more of an emotional leader. He was somebody that would get guys kind of up. You know, he'd get on a bus in the morning on a Sunday morning getaway day when everybody just wants to get home and fist bump everybody and, hey, let's go, guys. It's a beautiful morning. That's Gino. It was kind of more the emotional leader there. And I do think that he helped a little bit on, you know, sometimes when there are situations and a catcher goes out to talk to a pitcher, he'll come in and he'll have a couple of words there and sometimes lighten things up there. It's that kind of was him. It was more personality than anything else with him. Haniger brings the experience. If you remember, I think when Gino got to the Mariners, he'd been with the Reds and he was kind of a little bit of an undervalued player, and they discovered his defense and he was a strikeout guy and whatnot. Well, Haniger has kind of been at the top of his game for a long time. It's been a question of health, and he has seen a lot and he has been through a lot. And he is definitely somebody who is very open to not just answering questions, but going and asking, hey, do you need help with this? Or can I suggest this or that? He is a vocal leader. He is, you know, he is somebody that's not afraid to start the conversations, and he brings a lot of experience. And he also, and it goes back to when they tore this whole thing down, they kept him because they wanted him to be the example. His work ethic and how he attacks everything and his demeanor and how he carries himself from day to day, he was the model offensive player. That's what they wanted. And for a long time, it was leading by example because he was a little bit quieter and he did have so much that he had to do to take care of himself to get ready for games. Well, he's figured all that out. He knows himself. He knows what he needs. And he also is in his personality, which, you know, we didn't find out for a while, is somebody that is a lot more open and is somebody that can be a more forceful leader on top of being an emotional leader like Gino too. You know, when he's somebody that during the game, when he, you know, claps his hands together at second base, turns the dugout and yells, sometimes things that can't be repeated on TV, that gets things going. And so he's kind of the complete and full picture of a leader.
Last one here. What, if anything, it's always, I'll reframe. It's always really hard with a small sample size in baseball to take anything good or bad. So when they were really struggling to start the season, it was easy to feel critical, but you try to give yourself pause. I'm trying to take the same approach with good things, right? You're coming off a sweep, and I don't want to get overly excited and think everything is fixed because it's certainly not, but is there something we can take from it?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, you have to start from the standpoint of they've got talent, and I'm talking about the hitters. I'm not going to worry about the pitchers, and the pitching should absolutely actually get better as you get relievers back, and the relievers that they've had right now have done a great job, which, you know, that was kind of the surprise of the whole thing. As far as the hitters go, they've got track record. They've got numbers, and we've talked about it before. You know, so-and-so is not going to strike out at a 50% rate for the entire season. That's just not going to happen. And we're starting to see the bats come around. And in retrospect, when you turn around, and I kind of had started to suspect this might be going on, but when you have so many changes, both in personnel and then in staff, I think things can get a little bit muddy, and perhaps that happened. And you throw in, well, now you've got to take all that from spring training into the regular season, and that's, you know, when things get even more complicated, when the pressure gets turned up, when all of a sudden, you know, you can't be as loose with everything that you are. And if you do start to struggle, you're going to fall back on what worked before, even though the whole idea is to do better than what was before. And I think something that has really helped is a couple of things you probably heard over the weekend, how they have really kind of encouraged using the iPads less. And I noticed Julio about a week and a half ago sitting on the bench during a game, looking at the iPad, just staring down at the iPad. And usually when they're staring that long, they're looking at their last at bat. And Mariners don't really like that kind of, you know, take a quick look at it, maybe study it after the game. But even then, a lot of the things that they study and the things that they enforce are the things that you've done well. Look at where you got a hit off this guy. Look at where others got a hit off of these guys. Don't look at where you didn't. Now, every now and then you'll have to, you know, tune up a mechanic or something, but probably in game, that's not it. Sometimes you're going to look at that iPad to get a quick scouting report, but when you're really studying it during a game, they thought a little bit of that too much was going on, and now they're pulling back on that and encouraging players. They're not going to tell them you can't do that, but hey, why don't we just try putting that down for a little bit? The other thing is, going back to what I was saying a second ago, with just kind of the overload and all of the new, they're pulling back and they are simplifying on the approaches that they have for the players. They're not asking them to do too much. And so rather than focusing in on three different things when you're at the plate, let's just focus on one, and when we get this, we'll build it back up.
She is Mariners, sorry to interrupt, Mariners insider Shannon Dreher. Keep an eye on Shannon's Twitter account or X.com account, at Shannon Dreher, for any updates on this forecast, whether or not the game could be postponed. Make sure you watch her updates closely. Thank you so much, Shannon.
Shannon!
You got it, guys.
See ya. Let's get to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael
Bumpus.
First
down, there's a new way to recruit. Do you like the method, and how do you think it can change the way college players are paid?
So the new way to recruit is have your players do it. We saw Shiloh Sanders go to Instagram and say, look, anybody want to transfer, hit me up, because coaches aren't supposed to do
wild.
It. So how do they do it? You let the players go out and recruit for you, or you get your alumni to go out and recruit these guys, because coaches aren't supposed to do it, but you know it's going down anyway. This is how I think guys can get paid. I think that I'm just thinking with my I'm in these kids' shoes business mind. Look, I want this for my NIL, right? Give me 200K. Mm-hmm. But for every guy that I get to commit, that's an extra 50K. If I get a 4-star to hit the transfer portal and come over to Colorado, that's another 50K. This is how you got to start thinking if you're these young men and women getting paid, because it is a business now. So put on your business cap and start thinking about how to get as much money as you can while it is still the wild, wild west. So what have they done? Colorado, and Colorado's been getting a lot of heat because a lot of guys have been transferring out. And I heard Deion Sanders speak, goes, well, we lose. And I went and looked at what's going in and what's going out. They're going to be just fine. They have the number 6 ranked transfer portal class in the country. They're going to be okay. They got 25 commits. 7 of those guys are 4-stars. Or you got Quincy Wiggins from LSU, a tackle, coming over. You got Will Shepard from Virginia, wide receiver, coming over. You got BJ Green from ASU, defensive lineman, coming over. This is just the game. So people can look at what's leaving. It's all right. It's going to be replenished, especially at Colorado, because of all the extra that they bring. So this is the new wave. You have your players recruit, throw it up on Instagram. Mm-hmm. If I'm a kid coming in and I have influence, I'm saying, look, if I can bring guys over to this university, throw some more money on top of that NIL money that you're getting.
Second down. Love you some Brock Bowers. He's going to be the first tight end taken in this class, obviously. But if he's not available at 16, which he might not be, what tight end should the Hawks draft in later rounds?
Because they need a tight end.
They do.
You got to go get a tight end. You got Noah Fant. Kobe Parkinson is gone. Will Dissey's out of here as well. And I'm assuming Brock Bowers isn't going to be there at 16, but if he's available and Troy Faltano is available, I hope they go with the offensive lineman. There are two guys that I'm looking at. This is the next best, according to some rankings, this is the next best tight end out there. Jatavion Sanders out of Texas, 6'4", 245 pounds. I watched a film on him. He's a matchup nightmare. You're not going to line up a linebacker over him. You got to go strong safety or maybe a big nickel. He is what the Atlanta Falcons would hope Kyle Pitts could be if he gained more weight. Same type of style. He had 45 receptions for 682 yards and 2 touchdowns last year. I'm telling you, Kyle Pitts, kind of comp if he were heavier. This next guy I'm looking at is Dalen or Dallin. I'm sorry I'm jacking up your name, young man. Holker out of Colorado State. 6'3", 241 pounds in 2023. He had 64 receptions for 767 yards and 6 touchdowns. Watch the film on this dude. You get excited. His comp, Rob Gronkowski. I kid you not. He's even got something on his elbow that kind of looks like Rob Gronkowski. You know, Ron had that little device on his elbow. He is.
And a beer in his other hand.
And a beer in his other hand. You know how Rob was elusive, but not like shaky, jiggy, or fast.
He was elusive in a sloppy way.
Exactly. You put on the film of this young man, it is the same type of feel, but I love it. And he has hands. I would say his hands are maybe softer than Rob Gronkowski. Everything about Rob was just physical and dominant. But I like those two, man. If you can't get Brock Bowers, which you're probably not going to get, you got Sanders out of Texas, you got Holker out of Colorado State. Both these guys can ball.
Third down. What are your thoughts on the offensive line and how the Seahawks should address it in the draft?
I don't know. This might be controversial for some people.
Oh,
but
what a way to start this. Right? I can't wait.
If it ain't a guard, don't do it. If it ain't Troy who can move to guard or ain't a guard, do not do it. You have your tackles. You have backups for your tackles. All right, you got Stone Forsythe for Charles Cross. If you want to go there, I see Stone hasn't been the greatest, sure. But he's here for a reason. You got George Fant backing up Abe Lucas. At the guard spot, right guard, you got Anthony Bradford. You brought over Tremaine. And then at the other guard, you have Lincoln Tomlinson with no one backing him up. Yeah. It has to be a guard. I've seen some mocks with centers coming over here. Why? You drafted a center last year in Olu. You're bringing over Nick Harris now. You need guard depth. If it's not Troy Faltano, a tackle who could be a guard, it has to be a guard. Don't touch any other position on this line.
Very interesting. I was not expecting that. It is controversial because I think people are so used to, you've had a revolving door at center, and people really lament that trade of Jimmy Graham for Max Unger. And so the consensus has always been, you need to find your center. You need to find that guy. And then you have Jason Kelce the last couple years just blowing up and being behind the success of the Tush Push in Philly. And it's felt like such an obvious answer for Seattle. But I like that. It's a good take. Fourth down. Two teams have been clear on what they want in negotiations when it comes to draft positioning. Who are those two teams and what kind of deals can get done?
So the Denver Broncos just came out and said, look, we will move up in this draft if we have a quarterback that we love. All right, cool. You're putting it out there. You're looking at Arizona. You're looking at the Chargers. The Chargers says, look, we will move back. We're up for negotiation, but we got to feel like we've won this trade. My kids always talk to me during fantasy football. Dad, did I win this trade? Oh, yeah, you won that trade. All right. The Chargers have 9 picks in the draft. The Broncos have the number 12 pick. They don't have a second round pick. In the third round, they have the number 12 pick in the third round, 76 overall, and 121 in the fourth round. I'm looking at the Broncos and the Chargers and saying, go ahead and bust a move. Imagine if the Chargers move back to where the Broncos, 11 or 12. You can still get yourself a quarterback because that's what you need with the Chargers right now. J.K. Dobbins just signed with the Chargers. You got yourself a running back. You need a receiver. These guys need to be talking to each other. Figure it out. Denver wants to move up. Chargers want to win a trade. Go ahead and give them a couple picks. You never know what happens.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Make sure you download the Seattle Sports app. If you do not have it already, you can listen live to all of our shows. Click there to read articles, get breaking news notifications, and also, of course, listen back to podcasts and your favorite interviews. Coming up next in the timeline, a story I am not entirely sure we can read with keeping a straight face. That's next.
Sign up for Mariners Mail to receive pre-sale offers, exclusive content, and more directly to your inbox for free. Mariners Mail subscribers get first dibs on all the latest ticket news and action from T-Mobile Park. Go to mariners.com/insider to join the club today.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson, Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Okay, everyone needs to be quiet and not interrupt me and not laugh when I read our first story because it's so ridiculous and I don't even know if I can keep a straight face. I can't believe that this is an actual story that Curtis is having Bump and I cover, but here we go.
This is big news.
Was it a fart or not? That is the stop laughing. Stop. Everyone stop. Let me be a professional. Did Jaguars general manager Trent Baalke rip one during his pre-draft press conference? Was it a fart or not? Our first segment starts here.
Still got a couple of days going through. Coach and I haven't sat down and gone through the final board yet.
Stop laughing.
Do it again.
Oh, God.
Still got a couple of days going through. Coach and I haven't sat down and gone through the final board yet.
It's the excuse me that gives it away.
You can't say excuse me.
You just power through it.
Now, I have never personally farted. a day in my life. However, if I did, and if that was something I had done, I would have a look on my face like I heard it too, and I would look around like, did you just hear that?
What?
Anyway, I'm going to keep it moving. That was weird. The casual excuse me as though he like belched or like dropped something. Just like that was, Trent, I'm concerned. I have concern.
He sounded like he had the bubble guts is what he, like that was not a,
hope wasn't
a
wet.
Standard operating procedure.
Bubble guts is putting it in a nice way that sounds much safer than it is. I think he should be taking supplements. This is concerning.
Fiber One?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so immature.
I know
stuff like this.
You know, and laughter.
Okay. Am I playing it one more time?
Yes, please.
Oh, my God.
Still got a couple of days going through. Coach and I haven't sat down and gone through the final board yet.
It's the pause.
What is our show
because? He low-key pushed it out. It was a pause. Like, he stopped it and bow.
man.
I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
I'm not going to say who it was.
Oh?
Someone once told, oh my God, I'm like putting him on blast.
Don't worry. Remember I put my wife on blast?
Yeah. Well, no, this isn't someone I know personally that's a friend. So that's why I'm like, oh, should I do it? Okay. Someone told me a story once of a class that he was in college and he went and got a burrito before the class and it wasn't sitting with him right.
Uh-oh.
And he figured that he would open up the valve, release just a little bit of pressure.
No.
You know what I mean? And they're sitting down taking a test and there's this girl in the class that he has been studying with and he has a huge crush on. And she told him, hey, afterwards, like for this test, like we should go grab some food or grab a drink or something. And he's like, absolutely, positively,
I am
down. So he's got to just kind of, he doesn't want to get up to go to the bathroom. He can't leave. So he's like, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, a silent approach.
Gonna lift that cheek up.
I'm just going to lift a cheek. I'm going to lift a single cheek and he's just going to slowly release a little bit of pressure. So he does it and it is the loudest possible noise that anyone could emit.
A fallen soldier.
It is during this test. Everyone sees him. The person next to him like scoots his desk a little further away. He's like, this is the worst smell. It was so mortifying. He doesn't get up and do anything. He never saw that girl again.
That could have been his future wife.
That could have been it.
Yeah, but she wasn't meant to be. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Was Jesus took the wheel on that one. He gave him a weird burrito and that just wasn't meant to be his person.
Let me tell you one thing. I'm going to say 70% of men have either a passing gas story or a worst case scenario
this
story.
This is what I don't understand because Wyman talks about having a
kit.
He's got a bad
kit.
One.
He's got a special kit just in case you have an accident. You know,
I think
trusting
he was
a fart
quoted
too much.
In The Athletic on a story about players,
and it was
that
very funny, and it was a great read.
Mid-game. Yeah.
I didn't realize that this was such a common like.
It's a thing.
I don't understand why.
Thing. If disaster were to strike right now, Stacey. I'm good. I got it all covered.
there were
how many men travel
Boston
around
Marathon,
with extra jeans?
There were runners in the Boston Marathon that just went.
Why?
While running because you're racing against the clock. Like
Matt
you can't
and I
stop.
Are equal. You can stop, actually. This is completely voluntary.
That's
this is not
if you're trying to win.
Again, right? I don't want to win if that's the cost. We're moving on. It's officially official. College football is adding a 2-minute warning, helmet communication, and sideline tablets. Where has this been?
Welcome to 2024.
Right?
Goodness gracious. 2-minute warning should have been there. Helmet communication should have been there. Sideline, pictures, videos should be there. NCAA, man, you're so backwards and behind. Well, welcome to modern football, college football. Good job.
I don't understand how helmet communication wasn't there earlier. I am sure that this was already in the works, but obviously Michigan's sign-stealing scandal has extended this even more. This is something that should have happened years ago. So good for college football for getting it together just in time for an entirely changing landscape. Next up, the FAA is investigating United Airlines after Colorado Rockies hitting coach Hensley Mullins was filmed sitting in the cockpit of the team's recent charter flight from Denver to Toronto while the flight was in the air. You and I have different opinions about this. I saw this and was like, it's basically a private flight. Nah. He just wants to see what the cockpit looks like. It's like, if you were to like show someone and be like, yeah, so here's this button and here's what we do here. You like planes? I like planes. You, however, have a different feeling.
Get your, you know what, out of that dang pilot seat and go back where you belong. And then he's playing. He's pretending like he's touching the controls and stuff. Nah, man, I fly way too much. Don't be playing like that. And you got a squad on the – nah, man. If you just watch it, watch the video, it makes you nervous because who knows if accidents happen. I'm glad they're taking this seriously because you don't play, man. You're like 30,000 up. Don't play.
He's not going to touch anything.
Sit in first class. Go sit your butt down.
Well, if he, but the first class.
Take your
class,
free drinks.
First class doesn't give you the experience of seeing what it's like to be a pilot.
Nah, forget that. You know what? You got to go to school for hours and hours and hours and hours.
It's too late for that. He's already a hitting coach.
No, thank you.
It's too late.
It made me nervous just watching that.
Well, when I won a fire safety poster drawing contest in fourth grade, I was allowed to sit in a fire truck and nothing happened.
That wasn't moving.
Moving on.
And it was on the ground.
That is a good point. The truck was on the ground. Five potential names for Utah's NHL team have been filed with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. They are Utah Hockey Club, Utah HC, Utah Blizzard, Utah Fury, and Utah Venom.
I like the Utah Hockey Club.
Yeah, because Utah Venom sounds like an XFL, but a hockey team.
Yeah. Utah Hockey Club. That sounds prestigious. It sounds, you know, it sounds strong. It sounds like a strong name.
I like the Utah Fury. Which sounds,
all I think is Tyson
Blizzard,
Fury every
I think
time I see that.
Blizzard and Fury, yes. Or Tommy Fury, married to Molly May. Utah Blizzard and Utah Fury sound the most like NHL names.
Well, the Colorado Avalanche are just like one state over.
Right, exactly.
You've got Blizzard and Avalanche.
And
that
then
close
the
together?
Natural disaster category of the NHL team names becomes
Lightning.
Even stronger.
Lightning.
Yeah, Avalanche.
Lightning, Avalanche, Blizzard. I mean, the Kraken.
Hurricane?
Yeah, hurricanes.
Throw the Kraken in there. Yep. Next up, during Thursday's Yankees-Blue Jays game, Yankees TV broadcaster Michael Kay seemed to insinuate that the Blue Jays offense was getting some extra help at Rogers Center.
You know what's curious to me, though, John? We just saw Blue Jays in the Bronx. And what we watched was a completely different team than the one we've seen here in Toronto. The one in New York did not foul off the amount of pitches that this team does. It's like it's a different team in this ballpark. Now, home field advantage, there is something to that. But why would it manifest itself in the ability to foul off tough pitches?
Well, and you think about Carlos Rodon last night. He had a good fastball, right? I mean, he had good stuff last night and just had a tough time putting away certain hitters in that Blue Jay lineup.
Now, you could understand it if, okay, the next time you see them after you saw them in the Bronx was a month and a half later. Well, this is a week later, and it's a completely different approach.
I feel like this is, unless you've got proof, and it's not like people don't steal signs. It's not like we haven't seen a clear example with the Houston Astros of a team all the way to the top, you know, utilizing their own park to take advantage of sign stealing. But unless you've got evidence, this feels reckless and unprofessional.
It could be a reach, but what if they do have information,
what
but they just
they
don't
do?
Want to be the whistleblower? They're just like, hey, think about it.
I mean, to be fair, I was going to say then Toronto would have had a better start to the season, but they just opened up their season at home or had their home opener when they faced Seattle.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, if there's no truth, this is reckless. But what if they know something?
Too much of a conspiracy
Never
theorist.
No.
The Illuminati.
They're everywhere.
The IRG injury report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. The Mariners have reinstated Sam Haggerty back from a medical procedure on the 10-day IL. So he's back up. Option him to AAA Tacoma. Mariners relievers Cody Bolton with kidney stones and Colin Snyder with a knee injury began rehab assignments with Tacoma last night. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Switching gears back to the draft and then talking Hawks with Robert Turbin at noon. Don't go anywhere.
You're free now, free to stream beyond your wildest dreams, free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber, your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Seattle Sports. 7:10 a.m. on your radio, streaming through the Seattle Sports app. Get new videos, podcasts, and articles on the Seahawks and Mariners from your favorite Seattle sports personalities daily. Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
We are spending so much of the next week and a half ahead of the NFL draft talking about exactly what the Seahawks should do, might do, will do, can do. So some of these segments, though, are going to focus on the draft as a whole and just have a little bit of fun. Nothing is more fun than watching what happens at the top of the draft. This year, we all know what's happening at number one. Caleb Williams is going to the Bears. Literally no one on this planet thinks that isn't happening. Right after that, though, the draft gets interesting. So let's talk about maybe the craziest thing we could see happening in the top five that might actually happen.
Craziest thing. The first thing I'm looking at is Drake May going number three. Like, come on, man. Oh, my God, Drake May. He is not the third best quarterback.
Man.
I don't hate him. I just think he's getting more love than I think he deserves. Good quarterback, going to be in the league, could be a good pro, but should not be the number three pick.
Sure.
What would be crazy, New England trading out of that spot. There have been rumors that they're entertaining people who want to make a move. New England, you need yourself a quarterback. You tried the Mac Jones experiment. It kind of worked for a year. It fooled you a little bit. He got into the Pro Bowl as an alternate, and everyone's thinking, man, look at that. We got our clean-cut white kid at a quarterback. Another Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. No, not working out for you. Right now, you got Jacoby Brissett, you got Bailey Zappe, and you have Nathan Roque. Don't know, never heard of him.
Couldn't tell
but
you.
He's in the league, so I can't hate
Seems
on you,
like
dog.
A nice kid.
Went to Ohio. Never heard of him. So, New England, the dumbest thing you can do is move out of that third spot and not go get your quarterback. It all starts with the quarterback. But then if you do get your quarterback, which I think you should, you have to find ways to get him help.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And now people can say, well, why don't you just build your team first, then go get your quarterback? You can do that. You can do that. But you're probably not going to have a top five pick next year. Probably not going to have the number three pick next year. And you got some holes to fill. Your best quarterback right now, receiver right now, is probably Kendrick Bourne. You got Juju Smith-Schuster over there. Your tight end situation is okay. You got Hunter Henry. Your running back situation is fine. This is just an okay team.
Yeah.
But when you have an okay team, go ahead and get your quarterback, but then be patient with that quarterback. Give him 2 to 3 seasons to try to develop, and then you move on. But New England trading out of the number three spot would be straight chaos to me, and it could happen because we're hearing the rumors about it.
Yeah, Elliot Wolf, who is their, I think, director of player personnel or director of scouting. I forget what his job title is. He's high up with the Patriots and is going to have a huge say in the draft. And he said that they are open for business, that they haven't yet heard a trade offer that is really tempting them to move. But the Commanders, according to John Keim, who covers the team, he's not with the team, are not going anywhere. The question for the Commanders is, which quarterback is it going to be? Drake May, Jaden Daniels. The question for the Patriots are they going to take their quarterback there? The craziest thing I see happening in the top five is something that I've actually seen mocked a number of times, and so that's why I'm starting to wonder if it'll happen. There was a time not too long ago when J.J. McCarthy had been mocked to Seattle at 16. We are now seeing him mocked to Washington at 2.
Crazy.
And I read, and I, oh my God, I think that this was a guest that was on with us. I've read it in a separate column, and I should be better at citing, but we've had so many conversations. I'm blanking, so I will find this later. That scouts and teams are much higher on JJ than our fans. That the fan perspective of JJ McCarthy is game manager, and that the team perspective is, no, he can play for you pretty soon.
They say game manager because that's what he was asked to do at the University of Michigan. Who's to say he's not a complete quarterback and can carry a team to the promised land? When you look at just the reps alone and the experience, JJ has way more than Jayden Daniels. That makes sense to me. When you look at the talent, throwing the football down the field, using your legs to extend plays, I think physically Jayden Daniels has a higher ceiling than JJ McCarthy. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes down to just playing the position and getting reps and understanding how to lead and do all that stuff, I give JJ the nod right there. Again, Brock Purdy complex. Now, a guy like J.J. McCarthy has way more value than Jayden Daniels to some teams because they look at Brock Purdy and say, well, maybe we don't need the spectacular athlete to lead this team and make all these crazy throws and hold on to the football and do all those things. Maybe we just need a guy to run the heck out of our system. I look at J.J. McCarthy. He did exactly that with the University of Michigan, and they won ball games. He did throw the ball when he needed to. He did show athleticism. He can move. He is a leader. The guys follow him. So he brings some things to the table. I understand why he's being thrown into the mix when it comes to that number three spot. But if we're just talking off of physical capabilities and the potential, mm-hmm. I look at Jayden Daniels and go, yeah, you got to get that guy a shot. I got something that's right outside the top five.
Okay, I'll allow it.
You allow it? Okay, cool. Number six, New York Football Giants drafting a quarterback.
I like that.
I think it's going to happen. I think it should happen. I think that Daniel Jones is not the answer over there. I think that if J.J. McCarthy does not go number two or number three, number four or number five, then I think the New York Giants are going to take a shot at him. So outside the top five, I'm looking at the Giants and saying, go ahead and get yourself a quarterback if you like whoever's left.
Yeah, it feels like their only choice if they were to swap up would be swapping at number four with the Arizona Cardinals, because there's no way the Patriots, who also need a quarterback, say, yeah, take a quarterback we might want to choose, mm-hmm. even if it doesn't matter if you're in another conference and we don't have to play you. Like, yeah, go ahead and swap with us and take this quarterback we thought about. It's going to have to go to a team that's like, I can still get mostly who I want. We're all wondering what the Vikings are going to do. There's a world where they trade into the top five and take their quarterback. I think everyone's anticipating that, especially since if you're the Chargers, you can go a little further back and still get a really good pass catcher. You need some offensive weapons. The only other thing in the top five that would be really fascinating to me is whether Marvin Harrison goes anywhere other than number four to the Cardinals.
Yeah, I think Cardinals are going to trade out of there. I think the Minnesota Vikings are going to move up to the number four spot and go get themselves a quarterback. I think they are in dire need to get a quarterback. And they got to take care of home, too, man. Justin Jefferson still ain't signed. You got to get that done. Vikings have a lot to do, and they have the capital to do that with the number 11 and number 23 pick, man. You can make a move. I see the Vikings move it up to either number four or number five.
Here's the thing. If the Vikings move up to number four, swap with the Cardinals, the Cardinals move back, you are saying, hey, Justin Herbert, hey, Jim Harbaugh, here, Marvin Harrison Jr.,
right.
Just for you and your offense. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Go ahead. Go off. And I'm now suddenly so fascinated about what the Chargers are going to look like in 2024.
Well, that's if, again, I think Roman Dunsay is the best receiver in this draft.
And I like that. Why do you think he's better than Marvin Harrison?
One, numbers don't lie. Look at the numbers. He has better numbers. I think he has, when it comes to attacking the football in the air, I think he's better than Marvin Harrison at that. Marvin might be a better route runner when it comes to those 5 to 10 yard routes. But I think that Rome just wasn't asked to do that. So you look at the film, you go, well, Marvin does this and his routes are this. I go, well, Rome is just a product of his offense. He wasn't asked to do that. I know he can do that because I watched a young man play football. I just think Rome's a better receiver.
It is foolish of me to ask a former running back that question instead of relying on insight from a former wide receiver. However, that's exactly what I'm going to do because I love a good sports fight. Let's bring on Robert Turbin. He joins us next.